Hey, kids.
You're listening to the internet's wettest podcast about video games, consoles,
and pancakes.
The SML Podcast.
Baritones are cool.
Yeah, I just got this week. Oh, thank you. You're cool.
I didn't know they made baritone acoustics.
Yeah, Guild does. They just came out with it like a couple years ago. It's wild. It's like a 7-string guitar, except that it's got that low note, but not the high note.
Interesting. Oh, okay.
So it starts with B and then goes up from there. Yeah. It's kind of nice for me because I've been playing extended range bass, which also starts with B, so it's like, it wasn't an adjustment at all for me. I was just like, oh, this actually makes more sense.
Yeah, maybe start with B's nuts.
Oh, shit.
Got him.
Hi, Jacob. Oh, that's not Jacob.
How fucking dare you?
What's up, everybody? This is the SML Podcast.
Was a good run. I'll catch y'all later.
I got to keep all of that. It is a party cast. We've got pretty much everyone here. We've got Tim here. We've got Chris here. We've got Pernell here. We've got Brooke here. And we have Grant here.
Thank God.
It's a party.
Do it.
Woo, how's everyone doing?
We had a minstrel playing earlier. What's going on with that? Get that music back out.
Yeah, bring that guy back.
Yes, minstrel.
A wandering bard.
I wonder if you played something consistent instead of just like a random strum here or there. Like if the mic would pick up, or if it's only if you're talking that it also picks up the background noise.
You said a sing while you do it.
Oh, you remembered.
Oh, Nagila, my baby. Oh, Nagila, do you?
Did that come through?
Yeah.
For the most part, yeah.
I played it perfectly without missing a single note, so if it didn't sound perfect, then I'm blaming Discord.
Sounded like a LimeWire MP3.
Oh, no.
Oh, so it's like mistagged as like Tenacious D or something.
Yeah.
Weird Al and Tenacious D were the same person for like all of 2001 if you only listen to music pirated from the internet.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, wow.
Every parody was Weird Al. Listen, people, if Weird Al was doing cannabis songs, I don't think.
Yeah.
No, he wouldn't.
I never did find out who's the actual artist of all the parody songs that were misattributed to Weird Al.
God smoke cannabis.
Yeah, that's one I always saw. Wasn't My Fart Will Go On, Titanic theme parody? That was from somebody.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, that was.
Or how about System of a Down doing the Legend of Zelda theme?
Oh, yeah. Was that actually,
Fill up your hearts or whatnot?
No, the rabbit joint, I believe they were called.
Oh, okay. I was going to say, like, that sounds like something that somebody would mistag like Metroid Metal as.
That was me. I did that.
Nice.
Yeah. Oh, man.
So Grant has been around long enough to have had like his stuff like mistagged on like LimeWire or something, right?
Back in my day.
Yes. Probably. I don't know.
Have you ever found your own stuff pirated under a wrong name?
Well, no, I don't think so. I don't remember.
Someone uploads your entire discography is Mega Beardo.
It's every song I did, but it's just Nookie, you know.
It's all for it, so I hear.
Shit.
Jesus. But Tim, what's going on with you?
Oh, no, I was just about to say that both X-Strike and Metroid Metal celebrated 20 years last week, which is insane.
Yeah, bro, up top.
That is, yeah.
20 years?
I don't know if that picked up. Yeah.
Within a week, right?
It was like 2 days. Away. That is batshit to me that Metroid Metal went up 2 days before X-Strike Studios did.
That's crazy.
Now, 20 years later, here you are together.
Here we are.
That's right. Just on the, not even that it was one before the other, just that you're both at 20 years. Like, God damn, we've been doing this for a long time.
Well, it's like,
you guys creating and me being a consumer.
The one-ups and MAGFest hit 20 years at the same time because the one-ups officially started at MAGFest 1, so they share a birthday. Yes, we are all... That's just crazy. It's just wild.
like fine wines, friend.
Yeah, hell yeah.
Right.
Definitely messes with me, though. Messes with my head big time. Like, I'm probably talking like Mustin on Sunday, and now I'm sitting there thinking, I got to remember that part for Sunday to come up. Like, oh, yeah, so by the way, I heard that you're 20 now.
What the fuck? You're old. Don't remember anything. Memory is terrible.
That's what I try to tell myself. Hi, as I keep remembering things.
What up, Hockey?
Hey, just like shoulders in here, just like
basically. Hey, how you doing?
Super feeling old.
Well, welcome to the club, Joe. Yep. You know what it's like to feel old, right?
Yeah, I'm. Yeah,
not true.
There you go. You're part of the club.
The oldest one in the entire thread, aren't I?
I have no idea. I know I'm not. So that's all that matters.
You're all under 40 at least.
I'm 43.
I'm 42 this year.
Yeah, I crossed 40.
Yeah, that's in the past.
40's in the past. You crossed 40? What?
Huh? Yeah.
You just say you crossed 40?
Yeah, I'm 40 years old.
God, you sound a child still.
You're exactly 40? You're 40 on the money?
Yeah. Well, plus a couple months, but yeah. Well,
happy late. Hill or over the hill, happy late cartoon from the 90s.
Happy King of the Hill.
Every time I hear your voice, I just assumed you're like 17. What the hell?
No, that was CJ.
You drank a very good beer. With a
my voice is effervescent.
I am so annoyed by this. My God.
You sound great.
I'm gonna annoy you. It's a good voice to have. He lucked out there.
I don't have a voice like that. That's why I'm annoyed.
Not with that attitude. Well, not with that attitude, you don't. Yeah, work
How
on that
fuck
shit.
How do you practice, young people?
I don't know. You just try.
How do you do? How do you do, fellow kids?
Oh, that was creepy. Never say that again, please.
Hey, guys.
What's going on this side?
God, that sounds older. So older than I actually am.
You're just getting creepier is what it is.
Way worse.
Oh, mercy. The important part is I'm old and I know it. Clap your hands. Doot, doot. So that's where I'm going with that. But I don't know. So what we did learn though is you need to practice your voice, Aki.
I always know how to tell when someone is around my age.
You sound right. You sound good.
Oh.
All you have to do is go, it's electric.
Boogie, boogie, boogie.
Yep.
I don't know if that's. I don't know. That might be more.
Well, that, and there's also dental plan, but that's more of a Simpsons thing.
I'm a decade younger than you, and I still know that. I don't know if that's really a very good.
I don't know. I figure that's in more centered around the 80s and 90s.
I think it's evergreen.
I don't Fair know enough. It. I don't know it.
What's the
How
oldest?
Do you not know? Oh, my God.
I don't know. What is it?
The electric slide.
Oh, yeah. I don't know the electric slide.
You've never been to a wedding in your life?
I've never heard it at a wedding. I used to hear it on the radio.
I will say in your guys' defense, though, it was, as Joe said, it was a major wedding tune, but then eventually got outdone by that damn song where it goes, Charlie Brown, Crisscross, Shucky Ducky Ducky Ducky.
Oh, God.
I thankfully don't know that one.
Unless that one I hate every second.
Unless I'm playing it, I do not listen to the music at weddings.
That's fair.
I just tune it out.
You need to teach us that skill because, God damn, I'd love to have it.
Oh,
I
yeah.
I'd love to be able to just tune out wedding music.
I am an expert at not listening.
My trick is I just don't get invited to weddings.
Actually, I had a period of, I don't know, some amount of years where it's like, everybody I knew was getting married, so I had like 2, 3, 4 weddings a year, and then everybody got married. And I haven't been. I actually just got. I got like my second wedding invite in like 3 years recently. And the first one was in Arizona, so I did not fucking go. And the second one is probably going to be on MAGFest, so I'm also probably not going to go. Sorry.
Ouch.
Yeah.
Who has a wedding during MAGFest?
Imagine being someone who has gone to MAGFest and knows it's usually that time of year. I don't know. It was probably cheaper for the venue, which is why MAGFest ended up being that time of year.
So they're not getting married at MAGFest. That was exactly where my mind went with that. I was like, oh, they're getting married at MAGFest. That's convenient, right?
You know what? It just said to save the date. Didn't say to save the place, so who knows?
Are these people that you said do go to MAGFest or have been?
Have been, yeah.
They might pull that stunt then. I mean, if they have a social community that goes there.
Here's the thing, though.
Wouldn't be the first MAG wedding.
No.
It'd really have to be somebody I like for me to miss out on something else to go to a MAGFest wedding.
Right?
You're getting married at MAGFest? What time? wait, what day? I got a voice acting on. Panel to go to.
Yeah, exactly.
It's conflicting with my panel.
Tim, there's a question. So you said you went to a lot of weddings and stuff over the year. Did you keep all the invitations or did you throw yours away?
I lose track of them and then they probably eventually end up in the garbage. But I think I probably have some of them. But I don't know. I don't cherish them.
I don't even remember what was someone, on mine.
Who keeps what you're supposed to keep wedding invitations?
Dude, I'm over here I
think I'm the weird guy, but I was like, maybe someone else does it and I can feel like that's something people actually do, but no, I think it's just me.
I would love that. I'd love to know that Purnell frames every invitation, puts it on the wall, in the office.
I wouldn't go that far.
He has them in a shoebox with his Christmas cards.
Yeah.
That's a shoebox. Well, that, no dead spiders. I've checked.
Put it in a scrapbook for rainy cards.
I have all the postcards I've ever gotten, all the wedding invitations I've ever gotten, all the pretty much random photos I've taken back when Polaroids were still a thing. And I mean, that's why you saw all the photos all the garbage, because I keep in all the freaking Ninja Turtles and stuff. I keep sentimental shit like crazy, and letters I've gotten, that's the other thing I keep in that box. But yeah, every wedding invitation I've ever gotten is in that box.
That's cool.
And awesome. There's always this moment I should throw stuff away, I should start cleaning stuff up, and I'm like, I can't throw those away, those are memories. Yeah. So,
and that stuff's got to be awesome to look back on and just jog your memories of things you haven't done. Like I have just a small handful of concert tickets in my desk that I'll flip through and be like, oh man, I remember when my sister begged me to go see The Used, and then she begged me because she ended up winning the backstage meet the band thing. She was please go with me, please go with me. So I ended up getting my ticket signed by The Used.
Hell yeah.
Right. And those were memories in those tickets. Yeah. It's that one Simpsons joke where it says, well, it won't fetch much cash, but its sentimental value's through the roof.
and I just kind of run with it. Ashes Divide in the Allentown, PA. My mom went up to the band's fucking tour bus, knocked on the door to meet the singer.
Oh, that sounds pretty cool.
Away with it. He wasn't there, but the two guys who were there ended up just hanging out and talking with her and walked her back to the venue. And after the show, they got the singer for her, and he ran down the alley and gave her a big hug. Weird shit like that. I have such a bad memory, but I remember tiny things like that.
Did you ever get to go to the Trocadero before they closed up?
No, I didn't. I was just at the Croc Rock down there.
Because I do have tickets from the Troc, because that place, Kaiju Big Battle, they had all kinds of weird mess in that place.
Hey, maybe I was at the Trocadero.
Yeah. I'm sure you've been there at least once. I can't imagine being from this area and going to concerts, but never going to the Troc before it went away.
I didn't go to Philly that often, so.
But, yeah, then I look great.
No, what I was going to say, I'll tell right now, but I have a pretty good story about my brother getting all the members of Meshuggah to sign his shirt. I can tell it. I can tell the quick version now, or I can tell the longer version to Joe later. But it's a pretty good story.
Let's hear it.
Just tell us the long version now.
There we go. So we went to go see Meshuggah. They opened for Ministry. It was the Ministry farewell tour. And may I remind everyone that they've had three of those since then. So we're still together. Cool. We went to go see Ministry, and Burton from Fear Factory was singing with them on tour. We didn't know that, but I'd recognized him outside, and he was just sort of like walking around talking to people, being nice. And Adam got someone to sign the shirt, one of the members, I don't remember who, but the guy walked up and Burton walked up, talked to us a little bit, and Adam was like, yeah, I'm waiting to get, trying to see if I can get this shirt signed by the members, but they don't seem to want to come out of their bus. And he's like, see that guy over there? That's Jake. He's running security. He's like, get him a Jack and Coke and I'll hook you up. So Adam went and got a Jack and Coke and brought it over to the security guy and like gave it to him and asked if he'd do it, and he was thrilled. So he disappeared for about 20 minutes and came back with the shirt signed by everybody. So
that's cool as fuck.
Yeah,
that's awesome.
Or no, you were right. I was at the Trocadero. I saw MDFMK, the very short-lived side project of KMFDM.
Oh my god, I love it.
Yeah,
there it is. See,
why would you make a second band that's just letters like that? That is rude.
Because a major label wanted them and they didn't want to give up their name.
Boo.
Yeah.
Did they eventually offspin into MGMT?
No. That'd be great. No, they're back to KMFDM now, and they're still unbelievably putting out music since like the late 70s. They're still going.
That's awesome.
Like, yeah, 79 or 80, I think they started.
Yeah, that happens.
Yeah. But like industrial music?
I'm going to go see Sparks later this year, and Sparks have been doing their thing since the late 60s. Nice. So.
Whoa.
That was a good documentary. I saw that documentary.
Yeah, that documentary is so great. I saw it twice in the theater and like five times on like Netflix and YouTube.
What is that called?
The Sparks Brothers.
Hmm. Okay.
Edgar Wright, right?
Huh? Edgar Wright, yeah, because he's a huge fan of theirs, and as we all are. And yeah, he talked to like some cool people, and it's a really, really fun documentary, and it's a great primer for their music too, because they've got a lot of it. But yeah, I'm seeing them later this year in good old Austin. I drove up to Chicago to see them last year, so it's a much shorter trip this time.
I still think it's funny that last year there was a concert going on that was the exact same lineup as the very first concert I saw in 99. Fear Factory, Static X, and Dope.
Wow.
Oh my god, I think I saw that. I saw that tour. I saw it in Spartanburg.
Oh my god. Cool.
Holy crap, dude. Yeah. You're gonna go?
I didn't see them the most recent time around, but I don't even know if they played anywhere near me. But I'm not a fan of Dope, and I know Edzold Dope is the singer of Static X now, so I've kind of lost interest in them, too.
Mm-hmm.
And didn't Fear Factory get a new singer, too?
Yes. He's okay.
Is he?
Yeah. He's all right. Different drummer, too.
Is it even Fear Factory anymore?
Exactly. It's like you cut off the finger. Does the finger grow the band back? I don't know. I don't know.
Speaking of things that say one thing but pretend to be another, should we get to reviews?
Oh, boy.
Sure. That was a little bit of a stretch.
Oh, just wait.
Still trying to figure that one out.
I liked it.
It's ominous.
Tim, did you like it?
I liked it, but I can't place why.
I did.
Okay, that's all that matters, that Tim liked it. Yeah. First game to talk about tonight is R-Type Final 3 Evolved, developed by Granzella, published by NIS America, released April 25th on the PS5 for $49.99. This evolution of R-Type Final 2 sheds new light on the series by beautifully rendering its signature shooter gameplay in Unreal Engine 5. Additionally, this iteration includes exclusive bonus stages never before seen in previous releases, and all the DLC stages from Stage Pass 1 will be available to download free at launch. Whether you're a fresh pilot or a seasoned flyer, R-Type Final 3 Evolved is a must-have title for new and veteran fans alike. Tim, tell us about it.
All right, you need to drink some water.
I do.
You're getting scratchy.
I don't know why.
Yeah, so...
Bite and bite.
Yeah, this game swerved me
tonight.
Swerved me from the start, because I didn't read that copy before I got the review and started playing the game. So when I started playing R-Type Final 3 Evolved, I was very confused, just being like, why is this game kind of like almost exactly like R-Type Final 2, which I reviewed a couple years ago when it came out. for this podcast. I was just like, man, what's going on here? Especially because I put in the code and I went to download the game, and like the icon on my PS5 desktop said R-Type Final 2. And I'm like, is this the wrong code? Did I not look at it? But then I looked in downloads and it said, oh wait, no, that says R-Type Final 3. Okay. Whatever. And then, got into the game and I'm like, well, I remember these menus and stuff. It's just almost exactly the same. What's going on? Well, what's going on is that this it's R-Type Final 3 because that's the name on the box, right? But it is more like R-Type Final 2 Game of the Year edition, throwing up massive air quotes because God knows it didn't get any Game of the Year awards. this is a shined up version of it's mostly a shined up version of R-Type Final 2. There is a whole new set of stages in this, which is all you need for a shooter game to, get that number. But it's a lot of the last game is what's going on here, except it's been fully shined up for the PS5. They like redid all the R-Type Final 2 stages in Unreal Engine and they look way better than they did before. They looked okay. I reviewed it on Xbox. I also have the Switch version. The Switch version does not look great. The Xbox version looked decent, but definitely didn't feel when I was playing them like they were really utilizing the full power or even a modicum of the power of a modern machine. But this definitely, does. And especially those new stages for sure, and new enemies, those look appropriate to the hardware they're running on. So that's a big plus right there. You get it's kind of two games in one. You get all the R-Type Final 2 stages, you get all these new R-Type Final 3 stages. That's awesome. As it mentioned again in the copy, you get the state, you get the R-Type Final 2 DLC like season pass for free. I just did that. I didn't realize it wasn't in the game, or I didn't find it in the game. So I was like, I just didn't get to unlocking it. And then I kind of realized like, you go to the store and it's free. If you own R-Type Final 3, it's free. So that's like another 7 stages for the game.
Nice.
So that's really cool. Especially if you didn't buy those for R-Type Final 2, which I did not. So now I got all those stages to play. That's pretty nice. There is a multiplayer mode they've added in here, which is pretty funny. I couldn't find people to play with because, pre-release and that is always a dicey thing. But the idea is that you are each player has their ship and they're playing the same stage at the same time to see who can get the farthest. The other players' ships, you're not seeing all of their shots and lasers go off because that would be a disaster. But you do see their shadow, which will just be a different color. So you can see where their ship is and you can see them moving around. So you're not in your own little silo, but you only see your own weapons popping off. So that's neat. There's a new scoring mode, which is, always a thing in shmups, is that you just change up the scoring and how you can get them points, and it's like a whole new game. But the big hook of R-Type Final games is that they have a bajillion ships in this, not quite a bajillion, but they have dozens, near over 100 different ships with different weapon loadouts in these games. And this is no different. It has that. And you go through a whole progression of completing stages and acquiring currency in order to unlock them. The only fucking problem I have with this game is for some reason, all of that progress is still tied to going through the R-Type Final 2 content and not the new stuff. And that sucks. I don't want to play the old stuff. I want to play the new stuff.
Yeah, but that's weird.
It's very, I get it now that knowing that this is a painted up version of R-Type Final 2, but I feel like there was a less lazy way to do that. I didn't love it in R-Type Final 2. I mean, you know, some of it's tied to like, okay, yeah, just get past this stage with the ship. And there's plenty of difficulty options to make that like not too harrowing to do. But there's others where you need to acquire currency. And there's like a green, blue, and red currency for unlocking things. And it's the same. It is identical. It is identical to what it was in the last game. They didn't change it in any way. There are some ships you need like a password to unlock. I didn't understand that then. I don't understand that now. It just feels like it could have been streamlined for this and not just plugged in the exact same way. Yeah. This is something that is a problem for me because I already, you know, played a good amount of R-Type Final 2. It will probably be grating for anyone else who's played a lot of R-Type Final 2. If you haven't played a lot of R-Type Final 2, well,
you got a lot of fun in store.
Well, yeah, it'll go down easier, but it's still, with all the stages that are available, I feel like there was a better system that they could have landed on for just like, oh, you hit this amount of score, you destroyed this amount of enemies, or you completed this amount of stages. Like here, like let things drip out. You want to get those ships because that's what freshens up the experience of playing these levels over and over again, and kind of having to like, you know, pick your way through. And you know, a lot of ships are similar to one another, with only slight variations. So that is a big bummer for this game for someone who has played the existing R-Type Final 2, and just like it's going to be very redundant to go through that stuff again to really unlock a bunch of ships to play all the new content with. But you know, overall, it's a hell of a package. You know,
it's like two games in one. My biggest gripe with this release is that if it started off as an expansion of Final 2, why did they make it a PS5 exclusive?
Of course, this would be your beef.
Well, no. What about Switch players? What about Xbox players?
Well, like, one, fuck Switch players. Their system can't handle these graphics. Xbox players,
Why do Xbox players get shafted on this update in the upgrades?
Like, because nobody owns an Xbox. That's why.
Ha.
Fewer people own an Xbox. The same reasons that everything, you know, anything doesn't come to Xbox.
There's more and more making my gaming choices easier, at least.
Sure.
Less to focus on.
Yeah, absolutely. But
come back, Square, I miss you.
Yeah, I don't know. I thought that was a little weird because Final 2, I mean, maybe, you know, they put Final 2 out on, you know, they put out on three platforms. They looked at where it sold and they were like, all right, we're just going to focus on the PlayStation version and that's it.
Maybe,
or maybe an Xbox version will come later and they just wanted to get this out. I don't know, but appreciate that it looks a lot better. But yeah, you're getting the final two stages. You're getting all those DLC stages. You're getting all the R-Type Final 3 stages. You got the multiplayer stuff to dick around with. Who knows how much, you know, life that's going to have, but it's a neat novelty to get in there and do that. You know, lots of stuff to unlock.
$49.99. What are your thoughts on it?
Yeah, no, I think it's, you know, just keeping the things I said in mind. It's you know, I can't say it's not a worthwhile package, especially you get the deluxe edition that's, you know, the physical edition that comes with a soundtrack and like an art book, and that's still only $50.
Ooh.
Yeah, a little art book. It's not like a crazy hardcover thing, but still nice. You know, it's something. Yeah. Well worth it. And, you know, it's a very robust package for that price. And, you know, I'd say that, like, if you played a lot of R-Type Final 2, like, you know, obviously you're gonna be doing a lot of the same stuff over again. But the thing is, if you played a lot of R-Type Final 2, you're already like a broken psychopath who's already bought this game anyways. Like, you weren't waiting to hear it. You're just like, oh, more R-Type. Yes, I'm getting that. And you're already playing through it. But if you skipped Final 2, like, this is a what a fantastic thing to pick up. Yeah.
Cool. Sounds good. Have you heard of Counterattack on Xbox?
No, I have not.
I got to see if I could get you a code for that. I'd love to get your opinion on that. That is another sideways style shmup game, instead of having hundreds of ships to choose from, there was hundreds of attachments that you could equip on your ship.
Oh, nice.
So possibilities are near endless after you unlock everything through the game. And they also have 4-player online play.
Cool.
So sideways ship game.
Yes, sideways ship game.
Very
Shmuppers.
Good.
All right, Tim, that is it for you. Thank you so much for coming on, telling us about R-Type.
Yeah, it might be your type. There we go. Okay, I got to go now. I'm out on that. Good night. Night, night.
It's not my type.
That was awesome.
R-Type.
That was awesome.
I hate my life. Next game to talk. All right, next game to talk about is Smile for Me, developed by Limbo Lane, published by Serenity Forge, released April 24th on Xbox One, Series X and S, Switch, PS4, PS5 for $14.99. A heartbroken clown, wayward souls, and the juicy mechanical lips. What? Help the troubled residents of the habitat and demask Dr. Habit before it's too late. Smile for Me is an unconventional point-and-click adventure game. Puts you at the center of an abstract world. Nod and shake your head to chat with new friends and solve their mysteries to cheer them up. The people are bizarre, the puzzles are whack, and the world hides a sinister secret. Brooke, what is going on in Smile for Me?
Well, props to them for not using the word unique once, because I think this has got to be up there as far unique. As like, most unique games, and that's a big flex to not brag about it. So yeah, like I think that was like the Switch page you're reading from. Yep. Steam page says pretty much the same thing. I didn't realize this game was originally released in 2019. The Steam page says it's a point-and-click adventure like the Switch store does. The website of the folks who made this game, Limbo Lane, call it a nod-and-shake adventure, which we'll talk about in a bit. Even those descriptors being thrown out there by them, like, I don't know what to call this game, but no genre tags do this game justice for me. I almost kind of want to argue it's more of a first-person 3D exploration puzzle game than a point and click, but I can see why they'd say that. Suffice to say, I struggled with how to describe this game while writing this review. Finally just gave up, but I'm going to take us through a day in the life here. But before I do, I need to do a vibes check. I'm going to ask y'all a couple questions about things that you have seen. Have y'all seen Wondershosen?
Yes.
Okay.
No.
Excellent show, by the way. Okay, it's weird. It's like Sesame Street for adults on acid. It's
it was on MTV back in the day.
I met one of the writers of that show.
Whoa! I want to hear more about that.
Huh?
Were they on acid?
No.
Maybe while they were making the show.
Parnell said something, but it sounded like he was like two rooms away.
Parnell,
just one cell phone away. Just saying, yeah, that show will mess you up.
Yeah, that show is crazy. So you guys have seen, some of us have seen that. Have you all seen Twin Peaks, the TV show by David Lynch?
One of the best goddamn shows made by man.
Really love that show, and that's actually my favorite David Lynch work as well. Okay, are y'all familiar with the TV show, Tim and Eric? Awesome show, great job.
Yeah. I'm familiar with it, but I haven't seen much of it.
You're swinging and hitting.
All right. So this game is like all those guys got together and made a new type of Animal Crossing, only instead of animals, it's humans. And instead of a little forest town or a town on an island, it's kind of like an insane asylum basically, but it's pretending not to be. So this game opens up, it's not really totally animated at first, it's real video footage of puppets, but it's styled and edited like some closed circuit television 90s vibes, Tim and Eric kind of channeling, just disorienting, surreal, like choppy, weirdly edited or damaged looking footage. And the text comes up on the screen while a puppet with big puffy hair's mouth is open. It's opening and closing, and it makes noise with all these typos and text come up and little doodles. And the text the puppet is saying is, "Hey, thanks for coming here. I'm Dr. Habit. This is the habitat where sad people come to learn to smile again. You know, you're going to live here for a while. You don't have to do anything because everything's going to be okay. Thanks to me. Just relax." So then you wake up in your room in this facility, the habitat. It's a bunch of apartments for residents, staircases leading to nothing at first, which you'll unlock later, some courtyards eventually, creepy basements and an outdoor carnival that somehow also exists here, and much more, stuff we can't even imagine right now. But for right now, we're just in a couple buildings we can poke around in. We're no longer in the mixed media live action film puppet land that we started out in, but now we're in a 3D open world and we're using left stick to look around, right stick to move, pretty straightforward. Now, the environment is 3D, but the characters are 2D, and for them, we have this vintage cartoony-like vibe like Cuphead. Although that sounds clunky, Let me just make this clear. They all look really good in the 3D world, even though they're 2D. It's very intentional. The art style here, it honestly looks pretty seamless, and they're doing what they want to do visually here, but it's very surreal. So you start to walk around and meet characters who live here like you do, and they can talk to you. The voices are really garbled and sometimes like played kind of backwards, like I can't remember what it's called in Twin Peaks, but when they're in that sort of backwards land. So the voices kind of sound a little bit like that. They don't sound like a human language at all. You can't understand them, but text pop up when they're talking, just like they did with Dr. Habit, the puppet. It's kind of almost an Animal Crossing or Sims thing for some characters where it sounds like its own language, but every character you meet has like different weird voice modifiers than the last one, and each character has a voice actor, unlike Animal Crossing, if that makes sense. It's just really heavily distorted, and you're not totally able to understand without the text. A lot of games do something like this a little bit for their NPCs, but this game just goes really, really hard in this department. So as you're beginning to try to talk to people, you realize you can't actually talk. They can talk, but you can't. Your character is silent, and you can only nod your head to say yes or shake your head to say no to answer their questions. You do this, I don't know what it's like on Steam, but on the Switch, you do this by nodding or shaking the controller or the Switch itself when someone asks you a question for a couple seconds. And it does take a couple seconds, and you have to kind of point to an arrow, so it's hard to give an accidental nod or shake. This is where the Nod and Shake adventure game title these devs label this comes from. But there are other ways to communicate. First of all, you could try listening and not just talking all the damn time, Brooke. just playing, Brooke. You're great. Don't ever change. You do have an inventory, and one of the first things you find is a human hand. That's a tool that's sure to be useful. You'll use this disembodied hand to pick up things. Dude, stay with me here. This is a little weird. This game's hard to describe, especially this part. You use the disembodied hand, and it's a part of your inventory, to pick up things to add those items to your inventory, which is a bouquet of flowers. And it's definitely not your hand, but you do need it when you want to do hand-related stuff. So why not just use your hands? Well, you don't have hands. You can't talk. You don't have hands. You're probably not human. And that's kind of all we know here. And it starts to feel intentional that this is a first-person game and we can't see ourselves, because we're getting kind of mixed messages as to what we look like and are capable of from the different NPCs as we go further in the game.
Are you so a later bowling you can, pin?
I haven't found out yet, but I'm happy to update you in private as soon as I find out. I must be getting close to solving the mystery, or maybe I never will. But yeah, later you can use objects you can collect or make to give to people to communicate with them in different ways. Pretty quickly you get tools other than the human hand, like gardening tools for planting flowers, and a camera where you can take pictures of things and show them to characters. And the character, you kind of take a picture of anything in the game. There are all kinds of items you can find that you can give them to ask them about to sort of like prompt more conversation. So why do I compare this game to Animal Crossing? Well, everybody's got a favor to ask. Everybody needs something. And you're part of this little community, all taking things like one day at a time. One of the first guys you meet, he's like an old hippie dude, and he wants you to like spy on one of the girls to figure out what kind of art she likes so he can make her some art because he has a crush on her. You're like, okay, I'll be sneaky and I'll follow her around discreetly, which you actually are doing in the game. You can't get too close to her. She talks to herself a lot about what kind of art she likes. That's convenient. But she does bust you pretty quickly if you follow her around and is like, oh, wow, did that perv send you? I hate that guy. And now we got to figure out what might make her happy, too, because she's one of the residents of the facility. Since you finish more quests within the habitat, more areas get unlocked, and it is just super surreal looking and colorful. Definitely got a Squid Game vibe up in here, hardcore. Pretty soon, you'll unlock the courtyard, and then the favors people are asking you for aren't just conversationally related or like, go get an item, bring it back. Now we start to have physical puzzles with some real physics engine goodness going on. You might have to use the human hand we collected to grab a dial, to move a pipe, to kind of change the pipe's trajectory so it spits something out and bonks someone on the head. You're going to have to fiddle with this, test it for a while, but it's not just like, oh, figure out what I need to interact with in the area and press A or whatever, which is why I don't feel point-and-click mystery really gives this game good justice. So yeah, we're not always like, go get the item, bring it to the villager. There's all kinds of weird interactions and puzzles and whole like fleshed-out mini-games going on. Some of them you only see one time. So some quests aren't going to be completed in a day. Some of them you're going to do something like planting flowers and coming back over a period of days to see if they grew, or if we have to start over with them in different spots. But the gardening is less of like a decorating or customizing the game thing and more of a mini game thing. So you start to make one or two of the people happy. You fulfill their quests and they just seem really happy and it's great. But then you learn, you know, you really shouldn't have done that. This guy running the habitat, Dr. Habit, he really doesn't like that. He's like, ha ha ha, hey, that's my job. Maybe let me do my job around here. And then things start to get a little creepier. There's this girl you meet at the beginning of the game, and she's like, hey, you know those messed up videos the doctor plays at night if you stay up too late? And you're like, no, I don't know what she's talking about. Except if you accidentally stay up too late, like I did a few days ago, you will learn. Each day is timed. You can't really pause in game, but it's not like a real clock sync time like Animal Crossing. You just don't have forever in a day until your curfew hits. Curfew is in the early evening, and the lights in the facility start to blink and the music changes. And this is all to let you know that it's time to go back to your room ASAP. I made curfew for a while at first, but one night I didn't make it, and it seemed like I just passed out. But then Dr. Habit was suddenly over me and talking to me, and I couldn't move. And he made me look down into this long hole and was like, hey. And I'm like, yo, where are we, by the way? And there's some sort of light at the end of the hole or something. And it's really just a few pixels and some darkness. The screen isn't very clear. And the doctor says, hey, look down there for me. You see that down there? Yeah. So he's like, you see that down there? And no matter how close you look, Aki, it doesn't become clearer. So it's like, what is he pointing at? But you can't move or talk. And so there's a long pause. And now you can't nod or shake your head either. And he goes, you see that? Do you know what that is? And there's a long pause, and he goes, I know what it is. And then he draws a smiley face emoji, and he says, hey, just try to keep in mind I'm the boss around here. And then you wake up, and the happy morning music is playing, and we're back to our colorful world where everything's fine, and all we gotta do is wake up, hang out a little, go back to bed. Try not to cheer anybody up too much, because that's the doctor's job, apparently. So that post-curfew video is just the first video he plays for you if you miss your curfew, by the way. I've now missed curfew a few times. I didn't see that video again. And at this point, I don't really know what he is trying to scare me with, but I am a little scared. But, you know, I'm going to end this review out. You don't spend very much of your time being scared in this game, even if you are going to get scared. Let me make that clear. So I struggled to call this game a horror game, like, overall at all. But it's definitely trying to make you feel unsettled on the edges while you slowly explore and live in a very colorful little world. I don't know where the game is going to end, but right now the playstyle is very like light and fluffy. And when it does try to be scary, even in those late night moments, it's almost in a funny, self-aware way, and you can just do what you want with that. You can think about that harder if you want to. And it's one of those games where if no one else is in the room to experience with you when something crazy happens, you're kind of like sad because you're never going to be able to describe what just happened to you in this game that made it hit for you like it did in this game's atmosphere. And, you know, there's a lot going on in this game, but I do think the atmosphere is what it's mostly trying to bring to the table. And while it's hard for me to say in words what the creators of this game are trying to do because it's so different, I don't know if they can put it into words what they're trying to do here, but whatever this game is trying to do, I honestly think they nailed it. I think they hit it out of the park.
Ooh, well, it is a $14.99 game. What are your thoughts?
I think this is great. Like, I don't want to come on here and say this too much, even when I really love a game, but I kind of feel like everybody should play this game. I recognize this game's really Patty McGross out, like weird game. It's not going to be for everybody at the same time. I think this is kind of groundbreaking. And I got a few hours in this game and I was like, who are these people? Like, who are these people who made this game? This game's crazy. And that's when I saw, I looked up who they were and what other games they've made. I can't find other games they've made, but I saw they had released it in 2019 on Steam. And let's just say I'm not the only one giving it a very good review. And I don't know. So it's strange, but I think it's an awesome, awesome ride. And I can't wait to finish it.
Cool. Well, that is it for you. Sounded like that was a good one. I'm gonna have to pick it up on Xbox.
Dude, this game like took me so long to write this review because I was like, they did something amazing here. I don't know how to freaking talk about this.
I was gonna ask if you were okay because it sounded like you were getting choked up in the middle, and I was. Dude.
Now I'm gonna be honest with you. I don't drink enough water during these reviews.
Oh, me neither.
And then so one time, like a few shows ago, I took a break to drink some water, and I guess the pause was really long. And when I played it back, this is after I got my microphone back, and I was like, how am I sounding? You know, I'm trying to work on my delivery for the show a little more. And then I don't know, I took such a long pause with the water that you were like, dude, are you okay? And I'm like, ever since then, I'm trying to get... that was like an extremely long, wordy answer, but like, yeah, I'm starting to get choked up because I need to get my groove down here, and I haven't figured it out yet, and that's the true story of why my voice sounds weird. I should have drank some water, man. I'll get used to this,
are we supposed to drink water while doing reviews?
Water.
You sound like me. You need to say
I literally never drink anything but the times when we drink alcohol on the show. That's the only time I ever drink anything during the entire show, even when I'm not speaking.
I always have a cup of tea. I need to do the hot tea.
That's a good idea.
Yeah, it's good.
Just, I would just say start calling you Stella because you got your groove. You never lost it.
I'm doing that thing now where, like, you know, I've been on the show for over a year, but I'm so new to stuff like this. I'm scared to listen to my own voice because I don't want to freak myself out. But now I'm to the point where I'm like, dude, I want to be better at this. And I've shared that with you, Bruno. I'm like, man, I'm trying to work on my delivery here. So now I need to listen to myself. And it's hard, dude. I'm sure you guys all went through this years ago, but.
I still don't listen to the show.
It's so hard.
I think I'm getting better,
terrible. But like at what cost, dude?
I don't like the host.
Yeah. I know, right? The co-host. One of the co-hosts sucks too.
Which one?
I think just keep doing what you do. Just keep doing what you're doing because you're doing fine. And
keep trying.
Just keep in mind you're succeeding. So the trying is just getting even better.
Yo, I better mute before I start crying over here. It's freaking my hero over here.
Yeah, he'll be joking up.
I'm brisket.
Yeah, I need to give him a hug. I actually want to stay on to hear the Dead Island review, and I'm going to try to stay for Fairy Fencer, too, because I just kind of want to know what that game is. So I won't say goodbye for now, but I will say thanks for hanging out with me.
Cool.
Okay.
We are moving from one island to another with Dead Island 2, developed by Deep Silver Dam Busters, published by Deep Silver, released April 21st on Xbox One, Series X and S, PS4 and PS5 for $69.99, Epic Game Store for $59.99. The much-loved Zombie Saga is back with a unique formula of horror, dark humor, and over-the-top zombie slaying spanning an epic pulp adventure. Grant, tell us about your time on Dead Island 2.
Well, I spent some time on Dead Island 2. I didn't finish Dead Island 2. I will say that I want to call this more impressions than a full review, only because I was able to start this a bit more recently. But Dead Island 2 is fun so far. So this game is set 17 years after the events of the first Dead Island, which is ironic considering it's been 17 years since the first game came out.
That freaks me out here.
I would call it's 2011, I think, is the first game, right? I played it on 360, so that should tell you something.
Been a while.
It's been a minute. This game happened, and it's actually pretty fun. So I would call it a pseudo linear RPG. Somewhat linear in some ways, and some in other, not in others, and I'll explain. So you choose from one of a ramshackle group of unlikable people, let's say. Perhaps the most I'd say there's one character that I decided was very easy to select. One, because she wasn't a complete piece of shit, but also because she the only real ding on her stats was critical. She just did pretty well with everything else, and all of the different characters have a lot of different stats that change how they play. Not surprising, to take on the zombie horde. So this takes place in L.A., not an island, doesn't matter. I believe some of the game takes place in San Francisco at some point, but that I did not get to that point. So it takes place in the sunny city of L.A., which I will say I actually like a lot. I love daytime horror, and this game is very, very colorful, and I feel like that just helps emphasize focus they put on viscera in this game. It's a very bloody, gooey game. If you're into that kind of thing, I think you'll enjoy yourself.
Now, is there night in the game, or does it stay daytime?
There's some nighttime. There's some dark stuff, but it's mostly a lot of it takes place.
Is it scripted, or is it on a cycle?
It seems more scripted than on a cycle.
All right, 'cause one,
how terrifying is it?
I did not get terrified at all at any point in this game, but I'm also completely numb to that. Kind of like everyone's got the thing that spooks them. And for me, this is just, it's an action game filled with comedy and flying numbers and lots of gross beasts. There's little in the realm of scares, unless you find just the tension of being mauled by lots of people at one time. To be scary. So I can't speak to what your experience might be, but I found it to be more of a romp than anything resembling a spooky game.
Does nighttime change anything in the game? Because I know in Dying Light, nighttime changes a lot, and it gets
and that's
really fucking scary. I was about to bring up
is that I'm not a fan of Dying Light because of the night sections. I like the daytime.
Love the night sections in Dying Light.
Well, it's hit or miss with me because I like enjoying and taking my time and not feeling rushed. And when there's that day night timer, I feel like I'm being under a rush and I'm being pressured, and I want to go about it at my own pace. And then when it's night, there's the fucking assholes at night that rip you apart.
Yeah. See, I would like if you could choose what time it was, because I totally understand the timer thing. I hate the timer thing too, but I really enjoy the night in Dying Light, because my character just got so powerful at some point that I just wasn't concerned about them anymore.
I played further, but I don't know. It turned me off near the beginning.
Yeah, I totally understand that.
Part of it is less the actual act of playing at night. And, you know, the two big things in that game are parkour and risk reward with day and night. Right? Like you have to kind of plan for that stuff. And so I think the tension of that is even more intense than the actual nighttime stuff itself, although it does get pretty hard. But yeah, this game doesn't really play into that at all. That's not a concern. I played as Carla, let's call her a Latinx ruffian, a bit punk rock. I liked her a lot. She's the one I liked, so I picked her. And she was fun to have lead my adventure. The whole deal with this game is that there are people in humanity that are, I guess you could call it, immune to this virus. It's called autophage. And so essentially it's running through your system, and there are chemicals and things in the environment that can cause it to go off. Hmm. But you are essentially they call you a Newman, Numen, which is very funny to me. So you're sort of a part of a group that has this ability. It's mostly a melee game. Numbers fly off of enemies. Your weapons break. It's a lot of upgrading. There's a lot of tweaking. There are guns in this game, but they aren't very good. The shooting's not great. And I think it's just they had needed to include them for some stuff, but it's not really encouraged. It's all about getting there and getting your hands dirty.
That's how the first game was too, pretty much.
Pretty much, yeah. A lot of, and so it's all about mods. It's all about, updating weapons and making them cooler and stronger. You can put lots of elemental stuff on them, so you can do fire that causes damage over time. You can do electricity. You can do what they call melting. There's like bleed damage. So it's basically like modifying the goodies in your arsenal. And oh my god, you can carry so many weapons at one time in this game. It's comical. Never a worry about not having enough stuff to fight with. You've got this gigantic wheel of things. I have no idea where Carla keeps them, but she does okay. I'd say the weapons have a lot of weight to them, which is nice, but the enemies don't really. It feels a bit like, you know, that feeling when you're playing like a Bethesda game and, I don't know, like you hit them and the thing hits them, the models connect, the collision happens, but there isn't really a lot of feedback other than the number. You know, you don't really feel the weight of the hit. It's a bit like that. It feels a bit more like an RPG in that regard. But that's just how it is. It's a bit more about like knowing what weapon to use and using it correctly than sort of the experience of using the weapon, I guess, is the way to put it. But that's just how it is. There is a bit of a slop to the controls, but I remember the first game feeling a bit similarly as well. It's not an open world game. Really, it's kind of like a collection of these different locations that you can move through and then revisit, but I like it because I found that the environments are really well crafted. They're very dense. There's a lot of stuff going on. So I think it was kind of a good idea to maybe do that instead of going for the full on open world thing.
How would you compare it to the first Dead Island? Because the first Dead Island was very set piece oriented, where you were on the beach section, then you moved to like the hotel section.
I didn't play a ton of Dead Island, but I remember it being very similar. The locations are a bit bigger in this game. And there may be more of them, and I couldn't tell you, but it does sort of follow that same thread. So they kept that. The game doesn't take itself very seriously. I mean, as you could guess, but I do find the humor pretty lacking. I mean, you kind of know what the writing is in this game and the kind of humor. It's fine. And there's a couple good things in there, but you know, I just want to say the jump kick is hilarious. It's fantastic. It's like it's wrestling. I don't think there are a lot of surprises in this game. I think that it's I think you're the only surprise I would say is that I found it to be a lot of fun. I feel like it's a bit sloppy in some ways, but it really does foster creativity. And the one thing I did not get to do, which I wish I could have, was play with people. I feel like this is like a game that you just have to play with.
Yeah, co-op is so important in games like this. I was really hoping that we would be able to test out multiplayer somehow. It does have cross-gen multiplayer, but I'm not seeing anything about cross-platform.
Yeah, I was hoping that would be something they could make happen. I'm surprised this game is happening at all, and I'm even more so surprised that it's actually as good as it is. It's fun. It's a lot of fun. But I really do think that if you were to get a group of people together and go into this thing, it would be more than twice as fun. But yeah, that's I will say you die a bit quicker than you might think. When they attack, even though you may not feel it, you'll see it in your health bar. You got to kind of stay on that kind of stuff. So it may be a little harder in some sections than people might think ahead of time, but it is a fun game to play. And if you have someone else to play it with, I think that's probably that's the icing.
Cool. Well, it clocks in at $69.99, $59.99 on PC. What are your thoughts on that?
I mean, do your research. Check it out. If you think it's a game you might like or you like the first Dead Island, I think this game so far seems to deliver on that. I would say that if you have someone to play with, that's probably the best way to do it. If you're going completely solo, maybe just do a bit more reading and talk to some other people that have finished it solo just to kind of see what they think. But it's fun.
Cool. Sounds good. I got my copy. I haven't played it yet. It's installing, and then Ashley decided she wanted to play Hogwarts Legacy, and that's all that she's been doing all weekend because she was off.
There you go.
And what'd she get works her ass off, so on Xbox.
Cool. Yeah.
I assume you bought the Steel Edition from Best Buy?
I did not get the Best Buy one. I got the game. I do have a Steel book, but it was from GameStop. I tried ordering it, switching my order over to Best Buy and canceling at GameStop, but Best Buy sold out. So I'll just wait until their steelbooks go on sale for like $4.99 or something and buy that.
Do they have different steelbooks or something?
No, it's just the one for Dead Island. But they have different steelbooks for different games.
Okay.
Yeah.
I don't think I have a single friend on my Epic Games account. The only friends I have are the 118 invitations from spammers to be my friend, but I don't have any real friends on there.
I'll be your friend on there. You can add me.
Oh, thanks, man. Thank you, man.
I'm just going to target you with my spammers.
that explains it. Keep at it, buddy.
I need to start doing more with the darn Epic Store. I think I have like two games on it, and it's like
get your free games every week, man. Every Thursday, there's a new free game.
Dude, I review so many games a week. I need more free games.
They're there. Why not?
I miss the.
I mean, I have like 3,000 games and that I haven't touched. So, yes, you can always have more games. Yeah. I'm just going to tell you that right now. Yes, you can always have more games.
I was really pissed to miss the Death Stranding on Christmas Day.
I've missed so many of those ones.
I don't really want to buy that game, but I do want to touch it. I want to touch it. I want to touch it for free on Epic, but I missed my chance.
Don't you have Game Pass?
I do.
It's on there.
On PC?
Yeah.
Not on Xbox?
No.
You...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it's funded by Sony, so.
Yeah,
it makes sense. The loophole with getting it on PC Game Pass was it was published by, was it 505 or was it someone else? But they published it on PC, so they were able to make a deal to put it on Game Pass.
Nice.
Yeah.
Interesting.
It's kind of like how MLB's on Game Pass. Sony didn't make that deal. MLB made that deal. I love it. Anyway, Grant, that is it for you. You going to stick around or are you heading out?
Yeah, I'll check. I want to hear the rest of the reviews. And then cool. I got to bounce. Yeah.
Cool. Next game to talk about is Fairy Fencer F Refrain Core, developed by Idea Factory, Compile Heart and Sting, published by Idea Factory International, released April 25th on Switch, PS4, and PS5 for $49.99. Our story begins with a young man named Fang who has become a fencer, a swordsman who has the ability to wield a special weapon imbued with a fairy known as a fury. Along with his companions, Fang is on a journey to find the Furies and resurrect the goddess. One day, he encounters a woman who can save people with her song, and another who can brainwash people with her song. Along with the mysterious power of the women who call themselves muses, Fang's destiny begins to unfold. Chris, what is going on in Fairy Fencer F Refrain Chord?
Okay, so I think the best way to like start the review is that all but those last two sentences are exactly the description of Fairy Fencer F Advent Dark Force, which is where this game comes from. Okay, so I am very, very excited to be reviewing this. If you didn't know, a couple years ago, I reviewed my first, I think my first Idea Factory Compile Hard RPG, which was Fairy Fencer F Advent Dark Force. I loved that game so much that I beat it on every available path, and I think I ultimately put about 120 hours into it. I started a new game on PS4 just to start a new game on PS4. That was just Switch alone. This is, so plot-wise, conceptually, this is a different type of RPG that story-wise takes place during the events of the first game. So the first, this is not quite a sequel, it's kind of a side story. In the original game, Fang, or Fangu, as they call him, Japanese. Fangu. Like it, I didn't realize it was pronounced quite like that. But anyways, Fang is one of the most lovable, total idiot protagonists in video games. I have a friend who, like me, is very drawn to like not anti-heroes so much, but just like really, really dumb, like bad protagonists, right? And this guy takes the cake. He's both our favorites. It is worth playing both of these games just to experience Fang. I'm just going to say that much. He is a young guy, very food motivated, who has no interest in saving the world. He just wants to get to the next buffet.
My soul.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm so hungry now.
My spirit animal.
So here's what I think is the perfect embodiment of Fang as a person. So in Fairy Fencer F Advent Dark Force, when you start the game, you start the game where he wakes up in jail and you have to break out, and the story is kind of told backwards from there. How he met Aaron, who is a fairy who also turns into a giant ass anime sword. That's what fairies are, and fencers are the people who bond with them on a spiritual level and then wield them as weapons. That's the lore of the game. So he meets his fairy, Aaron, and then promptly gets put in jail for stealing food because he thought he didn't have to pay for it because now he's a fencer. So he thought, if I'm a fencer, then I'm a hero. If I'm a hero, I don't have to pay for meals anymore. I'm just going to go ahead and take this food, and then he gets thrown in jail, and you have to break out. So that's how the first game starts. This game also starts with him in jail for stealing food under totally different circumstances. So that's how much of an idiot this guy is. You start both games in jail for him stealing food because he's stupid and greedy. So yeah, that's kind of how it goes. Anyways, enough about Fang. Basically, throughout the events of Advent Dark Force, you meet all these other characters who all have different quirks. They're fencers, and they also have fairies, and they're fairies. So, to describe how it kind of goes in the game is that a fairy is a weapon when you're fighting with them in battle. So, you know, this girl called Harley has a handgun. The handgun turns into a giant bald man who can cook called Bajas. And
he's like an excellent chef. Harley's got a gun.
Doo, yeah. Doo, doo. And it's really funny because, like, Harley's kind of obsessed with Aaron because she's, like, this weird mad scientist who likes to study fairies, but, like, the game kind of plays it up in this weird sexual way, like she's kind of perverted. So Fang and Harley, like, really covet each other's fairies because Fang just wants a dude that's going to cook for him anytime he asks, and that's what Bajas is, and he's the giant dude that's, like, Harley's fairy. So, I don't know. Anyways, this is like the kind of like interaction that you see all the time in this game. These characters are really, because it's half visual novel, these characters, you really get to know them and their quirks and how they interact with each other in a comedic but really thorough way, to where like something happens and you're like, oh, that's classic this character, you know. So anyways, yeah, like I said, throughout the Fairy Fencer F adventure, Fang meets all these people with their different quirks and, you know, basically goes around dungeons collecting furies to awaken a goddess who is going to save the world. Or you can choose to awaken the vile god who will destroy the world. You actually have that choice in the first game. This game takes place after he's met all of these friends and they're hanging out together and they know each other and they've got like, you know, experiences together. However, this is before any of the like plot defining events happen in the first game. So again, this is a branch off. It kind of, it's a little bit alternative universe-y, because characters who would have, you know, like certain bad guys you would have defeated in the first game already are still here in this one. So, because the first game also deals in alternative universes, I'm sure that they have an explanation for that somewhere along the way. Anyways, a lot of the characters come back. I'm still waiting for my favorite character to come back. I'm not sure if she's going to end up in this one because she's a bad guy turned good guy, but I'm crossing my fingers. So in this game, versus the last one, the main difference is that instead of going into dungeons, running around, picking up items, getting into battles, and the battles being turn-based RPG battles, this one only has battles, and they are turn-based strategy RPG battles that take place on a grid. So Final Fantasy Tactics, essentially. If you think about, you know, think about it that way, or like one of the zillions of, you know, tactics games that are out now, this is one of them. So your characters have kind of had their entire like movesets and weaponry and like special skills and all this stuff that they had in the JRPG. All of them are transferred to the strategy RPG in a really interesting way. Like, they actually really took care to make sure that the characters have all the same moves that they had in the last game, but now they're just kind of rejiggered to work with the current gameplay loop. And in addition to that, there are now two new characters who are the muses, who they talked about. You meet a good muse along your way, the bad guys meet a bad muse along their way, and now your muses are kind of augmenting the battle. The way they do that is kind of the way that certain characters worked in Final Fantasy Tactics, actually. The muse is like, it is a unit in your battle, so you can use it to fight unit. And do whatever.
Wait.
But they're... Hmm?
I said unit.
Unit. Thank you. But their special skill is that they can learn songs and sing the songs, and they will power up your characters. It literally changes the background music to one of two different kinds of kind of, you know, just Japanese rock pop music. It's anime music, you know the type.
Good music, in other words. Okay.
LOL at that. Oh,
it is good music, though. Yeah. They got solid tunes in this one. The bad guy's music, by the way, so they also have a muse who can do music, and the bad guy song sounds a lot like Evanescence, to where it's actually kind of funny to me. especially given like the kind of gothy nature of like the bad guy's like wardrobe and stuff. Like, I don't know, it's very amusing. But the game revels in its own cheesiness, so it's absolutely not out of place for it to be that way. But anyways, yeah, so the tactics battles, like I said, you augment them with the music. If you want to, it'll definitely make your characters do different things and stronger. You can still fairize, which is basically pairing with your... It's a weird thing where they do this anime-like cutscene thing where your character throws their weapon into the air and it comes down and stabs them like through the middle, and then they turn into like this kind of superpowered version of themselves, usually with like robot parts and stuff on, for, you know, temporary boost in skills and like in stats and whatever, typical anime stuff. So you can still fairize in this game, just like you could in the last one. You can actually also pull off with enough successive turns of, like, you know, doing well, you build up this meter that lets you do a group attack on a single unwitting enemy, and it's really cool. Depending on which character leads it off will determine, like, what kind of attack it is, and it's, like, it's kind of cool to, like, watch them all. So, really, really fun. Like, they basically kept the spirit of Fairy Fencer F Advent Dark Force, but they kind of, they changed the genre, and they did it really well, which is, you know, what it says, it's what it says on the tin. So, just to let you know as well, if you're already a fan of, like, this game or the other, so like I said, half of the game takes place in a visual novel, right? Characters stand on either side of the screen, and they just kind of talk at each other, and it's all voice acted. The biggest, saddest, most tragic thing about this game, no English voice acting. The English voice acting was 50% of what made Fairy Fencer F Advent Dark Force great. It has a great English cast who read the script extremely well. I normally don't even go for voice acting, but I do for Fairy Fencer F. This one only has the Japanese voices, although the Japanese voice actors are also giving it all they got, so it's worth it to listen to them. But yeah, like I said, this game is mostly text, so people who were into the English voice actors of the last game, who are all, by the way, anime voice actors, they will be definitely feeling the loss here. Past that, like, I wouldn't deduct points for that anyway, because it's, like, fine. It's something I really would have liked, but, you know, it's whatever. It doesn't take away from the game at all. The other thing is that literally, like, so much stuff is just copied and pasted from Fairy Fencer F. Backgrounds, the world map, the dungeons, of course, are different looking because they're in a different format. But, like, the character portraits, all of the soundtrack is either exactly the same songs as in Fairy Fencer F Advent Dark Force, or it's, like, a kind of redone version of, like, of another song. It was all great to begin with, but, like I said, you're not going to find too much that's, like, brand new here. Like I said, characters, you know, art, assets, music, all of that is just, it's just copy and pasted. Like I said, they're telling a different part of the story that may or may not agree with the original story, and, you know, they changed up the gameplay loop, but other than that, it is just Fairy Fencer F Advent Dark Force, which, again, to me, is amazing. Two thumbs up.
Cool. Well, this one clocks in at $49.99. What are your thoughts?
Obviously, if you're a fan of the first game, get this one, because it's more greatness. I'm really, really, really glad to be revisiting these characters I've gotten so used to because I miss them. I already know all the things that they say in the first game, so it's because I, like I said, I played through it, like, actually four different times, all the way through. So it's like, I know these characters inside and out, and it's really nice to, like, see them back at it and, like, talking to each other, and it's warm and fuzzy. And it's, again, a great, cute, really comedic story. I love it, I love it, I love it. If you haven't played Fairy Fencer F Advent Dark Force, you're going to find yourself very lost by the plot. However, it is a comedy, so you don't necessarily have to know everything. They do a pretty good job of kind of reintroducing the characters in this way where, like, basically, like, the first thing they say has to do with their little personality quirk. And so, you know, you don't really get confused as to, you know, who does what. And so, you know, new players, you know, maybe check out the first game. It goes on sale for so cheap, like, all the time. But if you like idea of factory compile hard games and you like strategy RPGs, this game's worthwhile no matter what. But yeah, absolutely, if you liked Fairy Fencer F Advent Dark Force, definitely give this one a spin. It's really, really good.
Cool. Sounds good.
Yeah.
All right. Next up is Labyrinth of Zangetsu, developed by Acquire Corp, published by P-Cube Limited, released April 20th on Switch, PS4, PS5, and PC for $29.99. Fight Japanese folklore-inspired yokai in an ink-brush and illustrated dungeon crawler set in the moonlit city of Edo. The world has blackened under the ink of ruined disaster. Conscript and customize your team of warriors as you venture deep into labyrinths and ink your destiny in a winding narrative. Pernell and Chris, both of you check this one out. Pernell, how about you start?
You ink.
Okay. You ink.
What? I don't even know what's going on. But what this game is surprisingly a fairly typical dungeon crawler in the vein of what Experience is capable of putting out, which is not a bad thing, mind you. I'm saying it more so in the context of the fact that this takes place in the Edo period, essentially, but the classes are still fairly traditional, you know, wizard, thief, monk, you know, but I got past that pretty quickly, but initially I was like, oh, come on, give me some stuff specific to this era, that'd be pretty cool, though I guess technically samurai fits. Anyway, point is, this game takes place in a world that has been blighted by something referred to as the Ink, and you are tasked with leaving the last bastion of Hope Town in hopes of finding, within the wilds, mind you, the source of this plight, taking it out, and thereby alleviating the world of this predicament that it's faced itself with. However, the one thing that makes this game stand out compared to a lot of other dungeon crawlers is that this Ink concept is the aesthetic across the board for this thing. Everything is black and gray, and that might seem lame at first, because, you know, of course, people like colorful games, but what this results in, aside from, along with some other conventions of the dungeon crawler genre, which I'll talk about shortly, is this game looks really good, and is also surprisingly scary to explore in, because of the fact that everything kind of carries this weird, like, horror motif to it. The monsters look more scary than they would have been if they were fully colorized in interactions with them and such. But also, of course, if you die in combat, being this is a turn-based dungeon crawler, if you die in combat, this is one of those dungeon crawler games where it's not, oh, well, I guess you're back to the start, time to look around again, but all your guys pepped up. Oh, no, no, no. They are done. And you have to spend money at the church to resurrect them. And so sometimes it fails. How was that, sorry?
So much money.
So much money. You don't want to die in this game if you can help it. If you die, it costs a lot of money, and it can fail. And it can fail. And though it hasn't happened to me yet, due to the nature of these kinds of games, I would not be surprised if you can also have a failed resurrection where your character turns to dust and you have to get a new one entirely. Because that's the usual staple. I've been lucky so far, but I don't know. That might well be a component in this game. Mm. But the thing about this, though, is that at least for me, I can't speak for Chris, but it made me fairly apprehensive to go from like the different areas sometimes until everybody had equipment that I felt would allow them to hold on a little bit longer. Because another thing worth mentioning for those who aren't familiar with retro-style dungeon crawlers is that if you're used to games like Final Fantasy Tactics or Final Fantasy or Fantasy Final, you may be used to the MP system for magic spells, as in, fire costs 5 MP, fire auger costs 30 MP, whatever. I'll just drop an ether, and I'll get more when I run out. Nah, this is the retro style, which means your spells are classed. So you may have a character, say a cleric. And the cleric can have 8 grades of spells, ranking from rank 1 to rank 8 or so. And you get a certain number of uses per rank per day that you can use. And if you run out, you run out until you get back to town and rest. Which means you don't just enter battles and just drop your crowd control magic spells over and over again. No, no, no. You feel like when you use a spell in this game, it's because you feel like you're in a situation where you need to use it. Later on, of course, when you got like 7 ranks worth of spells, you might burn through some of your level 1s. Knowing that you have the level 7s for the big boys. But for the most part, you become very conservative with your spells in this game.
That that actually is the same system they used for Final Fantasy 1. It's based on the leveled magic system.
That takes me back. And also, that game was brutal because you had to buy all your damn spells one at a time.
Yeah, this one actually just hands you all the spells. Like, if you unlock, like, spell level 3, they just dump 3 spells onto you, and they're like, okay, here you go.
I am so thankful for that because, like we talked about earlier with the dying and all that, plus having to buy equipment in general, you'll burn through money in this game. So if you had to buy magic also, kiss my ass, so ain't happening.
My little... I'm sorry, I'm going to briefly rebut you in the description of the game already. I will say, so I like wizardry. That is what this is based on. This is literally wizardry. But they actually did and put in some QOL that is actually really nice. One of them is, again, that you straight up learn spells in wizardry too, so that's like not a huge issue. But in this one, what I really like is that when you go into town, you automatically just get a full heal. You don't have to spend any money at an inn.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah, and there's two different there's actually two different difficulty settings for the saving system. That is to say, if your characters all eat it, if you wipe out in a battle, you do actually get to choose to restart if you put it on that mode. The other mode is like classic wizardry. If your party dies, they not only are dead, they are in the spot where they died. So if you want those characters back, you actually have to send another team in there to get them. So,
that sounds painful.
So, like, the most expensive item in town, right, costs about 1,000 sen, which is the money they're using. You know, that's like the most expensive piece of armor is 1,000. And, you know, battles might get you like 30 to 60 in the first level, maybe 60 to 100 in the second level. It costs 1,500 to revive a single character if they got one-shotted by something.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah, so that's why when you lose a character, you're going to probably roll a new character and just level them up.
Like, yeah.
I did it twice already.
Oh, hurts.
I reached into a bush because I did the search command on a bush, and it was like, there's something in there. I was like, go get it. And they were like, here's some monsters. They sent three monsters at me. One of them one-shotted one of my guys. I was like, ugh. So I like dumped everything I could into like actually defeating them. Then a second wave appeared and one-shotted one of my other guys, and then I ran away and just lost two of my starter characters and got nothing for it. Now I just know not to reach in that damn bush anymore.
Damn straight, Jesus. I am very glad that didn't happen to me, because I've reached into like five bushes in what area you're talking about.
Watch out.
God.
Level two.
The game was like, arm spiders, like, fuck you, flame everything. I'm not taking any chances. I don't screw around in these games. But yeah, like, it's like that, though. Like, you just heard the same situation with two very different outcomes, and that outcome can be costly. I am grateful, at least like early on, I don't feel like having to reroll a character isn't too horrible on your time, but I would also speculate the further in you get, the more of a pain that will become. Like level four and five, you can get to that while exploring, as long as you don't have like a massive wipe like Chris was describing. If you got like maybe one guy gets lost, that's not so bad. And there's even a situation I'm in now where I may re-roll because I made a stupid decision and my cleric had her alignment shifted to evil. And I'm like, I don't want an evil cleric. That's going to screw up my party alignment. So I feel like I want to just dump them right now. And the whole reason why they became evil is because I made a stupid choice on one text suggestion. It's like, well, I'm going to fight these monsters. She didn't like that. She got real vicious about it. Like, why are you going to go from good to evil because I beat up a monster? Maybe because these were friends. Whatever, lady. But yeah, the game, I do feel like this game is a good time. As for the whether I chose the, you know, reach into the dungeon to get your people back situation, my answer to that is I played enough dungeon encounters to know that I don't need that anymore. I don't want that. But I do feel like whether you choose that difficulty or normal difficulty, you are going to find yourself in a situation where you're kind of sweating bullets on what you need to do. But I think that adds a bit of atmosphere to this game that I'm not going to say no other dungeon crawler has, because you will feel that pinch in a lot of other ones too, but the atmosphere just adds to that. The fact that you're fighting like yokai monsters and like corrupted ink blot creatures. And we didn't even mention, I forgot, one more thing we should mention is that one thing that can happen to your party while you're exploring the dungeon is like an enemy can blight you because they're, you know, they're all corrupted by the ink and they can pass that corruption to your party. So that when you go back to town to heal, you only heal a certain amount of health. You don't heal all of your health because you're blighted, and you have to spend money to unblight yourself. You have no control over if you get blighted or not. An enemy just feels like he wants to barf all over your face. Guess what? Ooh, you look gross now, baby. Time to clean up at the church, and you have no option there, but you got to work with it. So,
you think, oh, well, these idiots aren't even save scumming, and it's like, haha, guess what? It's one of those games. It just autosaves every time. You're not going to get away from the consequences of your actions.
That is correct.
Or the whims of the almighty RNG.
And there are quite a few whims. But but at the same time, with this, I think you would agree with me on this, Chris, is that you kind of come into these games knowing what you're getting into in regards to that unfortunate or fortunate luck of the draw system, mm-hmm. which means that you already know what you're getting here. You're gonna scream along with the pains of it all, but you also expect that. It's part of the experience.
Oh, yeah.
And this game delivers on that experience, too. I would say, I'm not going to go so far as to say this is experience's best work, because I'm still kind of leaning towards Undernauts for that, but this is very much up there for them, and I do believe it is worth a go at it. What do you think, Chris?
Yeah, I'm really into the art style of this one. I'm really into what it kind of brings to a classic dungeon crawler. For one, when you're rolling a new character, which, by the way, I have to tangent on this a little bit. Okay, so Wizardry, this game has the exact same classes and most of the same races as Wizardry. They just, like I said, they changed a couple of words around. So you've got human, dwarves, and elves, just like every RPG ever. But they called halflings cavegrams. So that's what that is now. It's a diminutive creature that live underground. This is definitely, you know, the high dexterity kind of race. And then they got Nekomata, which is a cat person. So they have cat people in this. And then half Oni, which is like a giant, which is the warrior monk like kind of, you know, thing. And by the way, you don't choose a gender in this, you just choose a portrait. So they have like a smattering of like portraits for each type of like race and stuff, and you aren't limited at all. If you want to like pick a Nekomata and then have it look like an elf, you're fine. It's one of those kind of games. It's very blank slate. They give you some suggestions for names, but you can just name it whatever fits into 10 characters. It's one of those where you have a quick re-roll on stats. So if you like roll a 6 on your bonus, you're like, no. Just hold down the X button and it'll re-roll another one. It has you hold it down instead of pushing the button, which is really important for those of us who just keep pressing the button, hoping for like that golden like 24 bonus or something. Because like with the weight, it keeps you from accidentally passing it, you know? So if you're like, wait, no, go back, and then, you know, you can let go of the button. While I like this for the character role, in every other situation, it also has the weight. So if you, like, except for, like, certain things, like backing out of a menu or something, but, like, equipping a shield or a sword, like, it spins the wheel. Like, it makes you hold down the button to equip a shield, and I'm like, why? Just let me equip the shield. You don't need to have the button press for that. I don't know. It was weird to me that it makes you hold down the button for like a lot of stuff in this game. But apart from that, I love the old school, you know, terrifying gameplay. The exploration's great. I like that you spend the first couple of rooms or so outside, which is, you know, you don't just instantly go down into a dungeon and then it's just like dark walls all the time. It's like you actually do go out, you actually do go touch grass, even though it's blighted, inky black grass that will probably bite you. God. And definitely wiped out two of my characters. But I mean, it's cool. I like what they're doing with this, and it also reminds me that, oh yeah, Wizardry actually should have been an Edo era, like a feudal Japan, like, era thing, because it also had, like, ninja and samurai. Those are two classes in this. They just don't have, like, your classic, like, paladin or whatever. And who knows, they might. There are unlockable, like, secondary classes, just like in Wizardry. I'm thinking this game is a really great holdover for when Etrian Odyssey drops, and that's going to be the big dungeon crawler, you know, bombshell.
Cool. On the Switch, anyway,
for me.
This one clocks in at $30. What is your verdict?
I would definitely buy this. Yeah, this is a great dungeon crawler.
I'm definitely on the buy it train myself. This was a game I actually was going to pre-order already, but getting it for review just makes me glad that I was able to play it earlier. But yeah, this is worth your scratch.
Cool. For sure.
All right, next up we have Trinity Fusion, developed and published by Angry Mob Games, released April 13th on Steam for $24.99. Explore dark sci-fi worlds and engage in fast-paced and precise combat in Trinity Fusion, a roguelite action platformer set in a sprawling, doomed multiverse. Pernell, what is Trinity Fusion?
All right, so one thing worth mentioning off the bat, I had to look into this myself to remember and confirm it. This game is early access, so it is not complete yet. This is a game at its current state, but there will be updates coming. So yeah,
they plan to be in early access for 12 to 18 months.
Okay. So I guess what I'm really doing with this review is, do I feel as the current state of the game, is it fun as it currently is to justify picking it up? So what this game refers to is essentially you're in a world that kind of where a group of races perfected a multiverse. And the multiverse was designed so that depending on what multiverse it was designed to fulfill a specific purpose so that overall every universe can thrive well. But over the course of time, the multiverses kind of start doing their own thing and becoming corrupted, resulting in a situation where they were all going out of control to the point where every multiverse was in jeopardy, and the only way they could come around to fix it was to decide, one of the universes decided to bring them all together, like to kind of collapse them into itself like it used to be. But in order to do that, things need to be done across a series of universes, which involves a lot of roguelike platforming. Now, the thing that makes this stand out in that context is that there's one individual by the name of Maya who is able to sort of communicate with her multidimensional selves, and those are the characters that you can control throughout the course of the game in their respective environment. You have a character who is like primarily skilled around like range combat, one who's primarily skilled around like melee frontal combat, and a final one, who basically the one you start with actually, is a little bit of a combination of two. She gets like melee weapons, but they generally have a fair decent reach to them. And as you're controlling these characters, you're running through the different environments and you find items that can be housed from chests or from enemies when you defeat them. And they can either replace your main weapon or your sub-weapon, which is also considered an energy weapon at times. Energy weapons being the one that, when you use it, it drains from a sort of an MP-esque meter that needs to be recharged by battling enemies and filling it back up, or just a little bit over time. So as you're exploring these environments, you'll be able to find chambers that will allow you to equip yourself with temporary, because up until you die, temporary buffs that will give you different perks and traits, which is pretty much the thing that makes each run primarily unique upon itself, because you find a new thing, you might be like, yeah, this is a cool effect, I want to run with this. That's unique, baby! So you'll basically equip these things to make your character stand out and perform differently. Every once in a while, of course, fortunately or unfortunately, you'll find something that will overwrite one of those slots, because each one kind of gets classified into one of five different groupings, which I haven't mastered, which is what yet. But I do know that sometimes the game will say, hey, you can't take that unless you get rid of this one. And I don't choose which one it makes me replace. I just have to replace the one they tell me to. It blows. I deal with it. Whatever. Moving on. And every once in a while with this game also, when you find treasure chests, where in a lot of these games, a treasure chest will just be, here's an item, equip it. In this game, they usually give you a choice of two things. And it usually becomes a matter of, like, you can pick up a one-time use item, like a healing item, or item that attacks enemies on screen, or cloaks you, or what have you, any number of things. Or you can pick up an item that will give you the ability to upgrade your character when you get back to the main hub. And I'll talk about that in a second. But so it gives you a lot of choices in that regard, too. Eventually, you're going to die, because of course you do. And after you die for the first time, the game will kick you back to a hub world. And depending on how far you got, you may find yourself being introduced to the second character in the game, because this is the time when the game unintentionally lets you meet them, and then you're able to choose if you want to take them out into the world instead of your current character. And if you go to the character, one of the new characters, you end up starting in a completely different place, because now you're in their multiverse, not the previous character's multiverse. So the pathways of which you can take to get from area to area differ depending on the character you choose, because of the fact that they're existing within their own environments. But there is one weird thing I came across that I still haven't quite figured out the entirety of and how it works, but you can actually fuse the characters together, hence the title Trinity Fusion. While you're exploring the environments, every once in a while you'll come across a fusion chamber which will allow you to combine two of the characters into one. And what I noticed primarily was that the special weapon of the other character became a part of my main character. So I'm going to guesstimate that there's other stuff that either I didn't notice or they're planning to add later. That's going to make the fusions a little more specific and stand out more. And I do look forward to that when it happens. It may even factor into more so with regards to the upgrade system back at the base. But since I focused on one character for that, there you go. So what is this upgrade system I keep rambling about? Well, as you explore, I mentioned earlier, you'll find two types of resources. One that you can spend to actually buy new like abilities. And there's another resource that will allow you to, over time, buy more slots for abilities to be equipped onto. So that when you're back at the hub base, you basically can spend these things to customize your character so long as you have enough points available to equip everything that you want. And that becomes what allows your character to feel a little different going into each run as well. So there's a fair bit of customization there too. I feel like the game has been fun for me. The combat was fairly fluid. I remember seeing a few other people complain that they thought the combat wasn't fluid enough, maybe a little stiff, but I didn't have that problem. The attacks seemed to do what they needed to do, and I was able to time them in a way where I say, okay, well, the slash works like this. If I use the attack, it goes across the screen in this manner. I know when to do it, when to use it. So I never felt I had to complain or be upset about that. I got used to it. It worked with me. And I like the variety in the different weapons you can find. I think I would like for there to be more over time, which I'm assuming they're going to add, but the different types I came across so far, I've enjoyed. There's been like claws, scythes, swords, daggers, double axes, and there's multiples of each of those, and they all kind of perform a bit differently. So, and they, of course, aside from just the performance of them, they also sometimes will have like different additives or effects, like such as like you might inflict like fire damage or weakness damages or poison damage for the attacks, or they might have a perk like increasing your crit output or any number of things. So there are some cool gimmicks there. You will, however, notice that this is early access even now, because you might come across a pillar during one of the exploration runs, and the game will flat out tell you you can't access this yet because we haven't programmed it yet. So it's just this thing that's just kind of chilling out in the wild. It's like, what the hell is that? Oh, whatever. I'll just come find it. Hopefully I'll find it again later. Because again, these are all randomly generated environments because roguelike. So, yeah. I mean, it basically just programmed to be a part of the tiles that can go out there, but they haven't determined what it'll be yet. But again, knowing that it's already early access, that doesn't bug me. It's just something worth hearing someone tell you that's in the game. But you know it's early access. You know it's not complete. The question becomes, is it enjoyable for what it is currently? And my answer to that is, I am having fun with it. I'm not going so far as to say that the environments stand out compared to other games. I mean, it is fairly typical roguelike in that structure, you know. You have a background, and then they use a bunch of different, like, you know, wall templates and stuff to, you know, manipulate, create a map for you to explore. I feel like the enemy variety could stand to expand more, and I hope they do plan to do that. But, again, I'm taking it as early access. I understand that there might be more coming in that regard. But I'm liking what I've played so far. I do enjoy playing the game. The music isn't going to make you bop or anything like that, but it does do the atmosphere right. So I'm going to go so far as to say I want to give it a try, not a buy, but that's also probably because I'm leading in the early access too, and it's $25, wasn't it?
Yeah, it's $24.99. Like we've mentioned, it is in early access. They are still deciding on final pricing, but the game may increase in price as it goes on, but it's possible it stays as it is. As it is for $25, is this something that people should invest in now? Should they wish list it? Should they keep their eyes on it? Or is this just better left untouched? What do you think?
I think what I'll say in this capacity is as follows. I do believe that they do have details on what they plan to add on the actual Steam page. With that said, I do feel like this game is a good time, and it is something I have been enjoying playing. So if money isn't the issue in that regard and you're okay with knowing that there's more to come, I do think it's worth getting in on the ground floor now, because you're going to have a final product that you're going to be happy with as long as these guys maintain their momentum with their development times and upgrades. So I'm sticking with a try in that regard, but only because everybody's going to do what they want to do, but I can say personally, I feel like they have a good ground. They have a ground floor here that's good. Yeah. So as long as they keep building on, this is going to be worth the money.
Cool. Well, at the very least, throw it on a wish list. Wish listing games helps developers. So give them a wish list and check the game out as it progresses. But next up is Coffee Talk Episode 2, Hibiscus and Butterfly, developed by Togue Productions, published by Chorus Worldwide Games, released April 20th on Xbox One, Series X and S, Switch, PS4, PS5, and PC for $14.99. Also available as part of Xbox Game Pass. Dust off your coffee machine and prepare your warmest smile to meet your customers again in the second episode of the much-loved coffee brewing and heart-to-heart talking sim, Coffee Talk Episode 2, Hibiscus and Butterfly. Aki, what is going on in Coffee Talk Episode 2?
All right. In this, you play as a coffee shop owner who has never particularly sold a lot of coffee. Ironically, it's mostly tea in this coffee shop. who has their store open in the middle of the night. They're not open during the day. They're only open in the dead of night. They close in the morning.
Hey, third shifters need somewhere to go.
I guess that's true. That I can't argue with that.
Not everywhere has a fucking Denny's available right down the road.
I've never actually been to a Denny's.
Oh, man, what I would kill for some more 24-hour food options in my shitty town. Anyway.
Amen.
And... basically, in this, you know, every level, I guess we'll call it, is just a night. And people come in, they'll talk to you, and they'll ask for a coffee or a tea or whatever. But they're not always like, oh, yes, I want this chai latte. Sometimes they're like, I want something that's really sweet and not very bitter and has some milk. Now you have to figure out what the fuck amongst all the shit you have to make coffee and tea with will fulfill that. And, you know, there's a meter for everything, for bitterness, for whether it's warm or hot or cold, for how sweet it is, et cetera, et cetera. You have to figure out just what level of all these things these people want in order to get them what they ultimately desire to drink, but can't articulate. For fuck all. Because it'd be nice if they're like, I would like a 6 on the sugar scale and a 3 on the bitterness scale. I'd be like, I got you. They're like, I want something sweet with a little bit of bitter. And it's like, so do you want a little sweet, a little bitter? Or do you want a really sweet and some bitter? There's so many different combinations. That's the hard part, is just trying to figure out exactly what they want.
The hard part is being the barista.
Yeah, who would have thought? The rest of the game is mostly just, you know, the people come in, they like the talk. You know, sometimes they're talking to each other, sometimes they talk to you, sometimes you get to make a choice and tell them one thing or another, which can end them coming to your shop forever.
So don't piss off the customer, got it.
Yeah, this is all very much the same as it was in the first game, because that's what this is. It's the first game, but with new dialogue and some new drink options, namely the hibiscus tea and the blue butterfly pea tea, which is just pea pods that they put in the tea, I guess. It's very weird. but everything else is basically the same thing. Lots of the characters from the first game are reappearing. Sadly, the green-headed girl that was posted all over the original game's images, she was part of the cover art. She is not in this one. She has gone off to do research for her books because she's a writer. But basically every other character makes an appearance. Some of them are still regulars, like your cop friend, who's there like 90% of the time. And, you know, they're just talking about real life stuff. Like, you know, he might have a section where he comes in, he's like, yeah, my kid was doing, we found out after my kid did their midterm that, they apparently weren't studying. And you're like, oh, that sucks. Did it get worked up? Yeah, I had to put my foot down. They did real great on the next exam. She hasn't talked for me for a month. And it's just like, it's just normal, standard stuff that people might talk about with people they know. And it's like, you're not really being like, well, you should do this, that, or the other. No, you're just listening to him. He's just telling you. And then he might be like, oh, I got a call from the wife. Wish me luck. And then he just walks off. And it's like, this is just stuff you would expect if you were a barista, a bartender, whatever. It's just listening to people and enjoying the ambiance. That is really what these games are. They are all about just sitting there, relaxing, chilling, having some fun. I really like some of the characters. I'm not going to tell you who any of them are because they appear in different chapters in the game, and I don't.
I
wanna,
like the cute ones. Ha 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 ha.
Right, right.
No comment. I feel so called out.
Well, I know the first game was an underground kind of hit. Like, people joked about it when it first came out. And then they played it, and they were like, wow, this is actually, like, a really cool, chill experience. The second game's sitting at $15. What do you think?
Oh, hell yes. Totally. Especially if you like the first one, this is more of the same. It is so good. I loved the first game, so I was already like, I'm pretty sure I'm going to love this. And I did. I fully suggest it to everyone, unless you just absolutely hate being relaxed and chill, in which case, why are you even gaming? I mean, stop taking your steroids and just chill out for a minute. Everyone else, yeah, you know, buy the game. It's fantastic. It was a cult classic for a reason, because it was good. Go get it.
If you're short on bucks, it's on Game Pass. So give it a try there and give it a go. Next up, Shieldmaid MX, developed and published by Hit Piece Studio, released March 24th on Steam for $14.99, outnumbered and outgunned in deep space. No problem. Turn your enemies' attacks into pure bullet heaven with your shield tech and absorb projectiles to power up your ship and score big. But when your shield expires and it's danger time, you better switch up your strategy fast. Chris and Purnell, both of you check this one out. Chris, what do you think?
Okay, so Shieldmaid, this is a horizontally scrolling shmup, which is short
sideways
for
shooter.
A sideways shooty.
Yeah.
so yeah, this is one with a difference, and actually, it may be the first game to which I think the bullet heaven alternative to, you know, the classic bullet hell might actually apply. So in this game, of course, you scroll from left to right and you shoot things until, you know, it's all blown up and you're done. However, the difference here is the way that your ship responds and reacts to, like, different things. So your ship is equipped with a shield that can absorb enemy bullets. However, the shield is kind of on a timer where basically if the timer runs out, then your ship goes into danger mode. The shield turns into, like, this kind of ball of fire, and if you get hit by anything at that point, then you die, which is bad. The way you activate the shield is by getting hit by a bullet once. The bullets are all purple when there's nothing going on, everything's, like, nice and color-coded. Once your ship gets hit by a purple ball, the shield will activate, and now all the bullets that you can absorb will turn into a bright blue. So that you know to, like, go and grab them. They're worth points, and they will also upgrade your weapon. This is the way that you upgrade your weapon in the game, is by absorbing enemy fire, which is kind of great. Once you hit max level, then your shield and the enemy fire turns gold. And now you're at max level, just racking up those points and all this other stuff. The way that you keep the shield timer from running out is to continually destroy enemies' ships, which are going to appear. So there's a very much a push and pull to, like, the way the game works. There's strategy in sparing enemies because they might be dumping out just all these bullets to, like, upgrade your weapon and stuff. There's another meter that goes up as you destroy enemies, and that is a big giant special beam that that can take down bosses like nobody's business. So you definitely want to like try and time that one around around when a boss is going to appear. Once, like I said, the boss appears, you destroy him. You literally do a barrel roll into a wormhole. There's one button for barrel rolls. It is called a barrel roll in this game too. And then you move on to the next stage. If you lose all your lives, you get to start from a certain checkpoint, which is kind of cool. There's, you know, well, we'll talk about the different ships and things like that in a bit. But yeah, this one's pretty nice. The graphical presentation is sprite-based 2D, and it has really great lighting effects. Like, as bullets pass by, like solid objects and stuff, like for one, the solid objects have outlines around them, like glowing outlines, so that you actually know when an asteroid is about to hit you. So that's great. Because, you know, sometimes you don't know in a shmup what's like, what you can pass through, what's background, what's foreground. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And like, you'll actually see like light, like parts of the asteroid light up as bullets pass by it, like things like that. It's like, for the fact that it's like 2D sprites, it's like actually they did paid a lot of attention to the aesthetics of it. Okay, I'll let Purnell talk now.
Honestly, you've said plenty. Like, I will say though that I do enjoy this game as well. I didn't expect to initially because the moment, I mean, it's going to sound real dumb, but the cover art all very much is inspired by the old classic movie Heavy Metal, and then you boot the game up. I'm like, where's that? It's not here. But I quickly kind of fell into the groove of the idea of like charging up your shot or charging up your shield. And the thing I think I like about the most is the fact that it leans on you to push really hard on getting a lot of bullets eaten up while your shield is up, because the longer you eat, the longer your shield is up and the more bullets you've eaten, the stronger your shot gets too. So you're pretty much playing chicken for the hope of getting a more powerful shot, which also charges your EX meter, which allows you to burst those off too, which is like a super shot. So you'll find yourself in these moments where you're like just dancing with danger. And for people like Joe who love achievements, this game is good for that too, because there are a fair number of them, but this does what I like when games do it. And it's a rarity nowadays where the achievements actually unlock things. So as you get the achievements in the game, you earn AP for each one, kind of like Xbox Live achievement points. And after you hit certain thresholds, you can spend those to unlock additional modes, additional ship colors, and the modes themselves kind of change how the game itself works on you, too. It becomes a lot harder. Like, I know one of the modes I was able to unlock feels more like, even this early in the unlock structure, mind you, it felt a bit like those classic cave black label modes where enemies explode and become more bullets. So I was kind of surprised to come across. I was like, damn, this is only like the second or third unlock here, and I'm already getting bombarded. And there's EX versions of all of the difficulties. I have no idea what those are because they're not cheap to unlock, but they give you a lot. There's a lot here. There's a surprising amount of content in this game, and I do enjoy playing it. I do think it's a bit of fun.
I think it's a lot of fun. Like, I haven't been too big into shmups lately because they all seem samey and kind of tough, and like even on the easy modes, they just don't feel rewarding enough. This one, I was actually enjoying myself. I was, you know, diving into bullets, shooting shit, getting high scores. I got a couple of score achievements already. It was just a different feel from most shmups where you're trying to avoid everything. To this one, you're trying to hit everything until you're in danger mode, and then you gotta take it easy for a few seconds.
The beautiful thing about this too is that they don't let you necessarily, I mean, it may be maybe later in the game per se, but there are definitely some things where they try to make you lean on that too, because you're like, yeah, eat these bullets, eat those bullets, and then I know it's like, is that a missile?
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, dodge the missiles, can't hit the missiles. So they do a good job of being like, I'm invincible, except I'm not. So it's, and I do like the fact that I think the way they ramp up the challenge by having the unlockable modes helps a lot with that feeling, too, because you can feel a genuine sense of completion by just beating the initial difficulty or initial mode. I don't even want to call it difficulty because the modes themselves function differently. But you can feel a genuine sense of accomplishment by beating that first mode, and you might never need to do any other stuff. You're gonna try, of course. there's content there, but if you're like, crap, I can't get past Jaeger mode. Oh well, you beat Jaeger mode, and that's cool. You know, you feel good about that. But if you do better than that, you'll do better.
Let's not dive too much into this one because we're going to have a chat with the developer coming up in a couple of episodes. So we have that to look forward to. We're going to hear a lot more about the game in an upcoming show. But as for now, the game's $15. Is this something worth jumping on?
Hell yeah.
Easy buy recommendation.
This game's great.
Cool.
And it's grape.
Yay! it's colorful, so there might be grapes in there.
Yeah, the purple bullets, I guess, could be like grapes. Yeah.
We'll ask the developer when he's on if they're grapes or not. But one final game to talk about tonight is called Shadows Over Loathing, developed and published by Asymmetric, released April 19th on the Switch for $23. Your Uncle Murray has requested your aid at his antique shop in Ocean City, but upon your arrival, the old man is nowhere to be found. Your investigation into his disappearance and the artifacts he's been collecting takes a turn when you stumble across some shadowy plots and a bunch of squirming eldritch tentacles that threaten to bring about the end of the world.
Purnell, oh, not that.
No, not the end of the world. That never happens in video games. Purnell, what's going on in Shadows Over Loathing?
A lot of weird shit. I mean, if you've ever played West of Loathing, and I'm pretty sure there's another game before that I never got to play. Kingdom of Loathing. If you played Kingdom of Loathing or West of Loathing, you probably know what you're getting into with this. And what that is,
if you've played those, you probably bought this already.
You ain't lying. You are not lying. But for the oddities who have not, one, what the hell are you doing? And two, so the entire concept of these games that you play in a world where everybody's a stick figure person and the game's currency is meat, like actual slabs of meat. And you are pretty much engaging with individuals in a sort of like a classic RPG style of stats and all, but they give it its own tweak. Like, your primary stats are muscle, mysticality, and moxie. And that factors into your attacks depending on what types of attacks you use. And also factors in some of your choices for dialogue and your actions. So you'll be balancing those things out. And it can be modified by different equipment you can find or items you can kind of consume. As you're exploring this game, the main idea is that you are walking around Ocean City, and I swear this is like some amalgamation of like a combination of like Long Island, New York, and like Ocean City, New Jersey, and I freaking love it for that. This feels like Ocean City, New Jersey. But you're pretty much walking around like in the flapper era time of that, which they kind of contextualize it around, you know, like, oh, like crank cars and stuff like that. And you are, while Joe mentioned it earlier, like you came to look for your uncle, but he's nowhere to be found. But now you got wound up in this weird adventure where you're trying to locate cursed artifacts, because it turns out his actual business in Ocean City is the acquisition and purging of cursed artifacts. And with him gone, you need to help take up the mantle by doing so. And what ends up happening here is you find yourself exploring the actual world itself to locate these things in a sort of series of missions. And the interactions you engage in are freaking, they're weird. I don't know how to describe them. They're freaking weird. I think, and in some respects, depending on how you are, you might be like me, you might find yourself occasionally being like, I kind of tuned out a little bit because, not a negative per se, but because they use like freaking like flapper dialogue. Like we're talking, like they lean hard on like 1920s slang and mess like that. And there's a part where I remember being caught up in a dreamscape because, and this isn't going to make sense to you, but that's fine. It shouldn't. You find a cursed hat, but you have to purge the cursed hat of its curse. But to do so, you have to go into a machine which takes you to a dreamscape. And when they first described it, I was like, oh, I'm going to go to this place and probably fight like a demon that's like a boss, and it's going to give me my hat back. But instead, it takes you to a farm with three trees, and all the trees are wearing fedoras, and like multiple fedoras. And they talk to you in this like bonkers language. Also, you're a lumberjack now for some reason. And it becomes a classic of three of us talk, one of us always lies, one of us always tells the truth, and one of us always honks. I'm like, but they say in that actual dialect that I was talking about earlier. So I'm like, what the hell are these jerk asses talking about? And what am I supposed to do? So I'm like trying to read through the dialogue, like, who's lying? Who's telling the truth? And the attorney's like, oh, wait. None of these fuckers honks. That's the lie. The lie is no one honks. So I went back to the tree. It just, all of it was ridiculous. The entire scenario was ridiculous. But then when it was all done, I got a cool hat, and the hat gave me new stats and hit points. And I was happy to wear this fedora around town. And there's even a cool guy who takes pictures of you in every new hat you get and pays you for them. So it's like, he's like, hey, baby, you got the face of $1 million. I got to take your photo. You're like, okay, yeah, take my photo, brother. But you can also get different perks depending on, like, dialogue choices you make, whether it be from, like, the beginning of the game where they kind of set you up with your character class and type, or just general dialogue, like, result in you getting a new perk, and that might affect your conversation options. It might affect your stats. I have one where it's, I don't even know if it's going to help me in any other way, but I just know it changes dialogue here and there. Like, I got the haunted character trait, and all it ends up happening is, like, I have a dialogue conversation with somebody, and every once in a while I have a choice of dialogue that just sounds really morbid and creepy, like, yeah, I know what darkness feels like. It's like, yeah, because I'm haunted, so of course I can say that. And the person doesn't really go, okay, I'm going to walk away or anything. It's just more humorous dialogue. One time I came up to a character. We said their name was Dusty. And they were dirty. They were clearly dirty. And one of the dialogue choices was like, yeah, that's pretty clear to me that you're very dusty. And when you say that, the character goes, yeah, make sure to wear this name tag so everyone can tell. Basically just kind of flipped the idea on their heads. Like, no, I'm not filthy. I know that people can read my name tag. That's why they know I'm Dusty. But I may not come across when I'm describing it here, but I laughed really hard at that. I laughed because I expected to get a funny dialogue response, but it was funny in a way I was not expecting. And that happens a lot in this game. From the item descriptions to the actual things you have to investigate on the ground, on the map, to the abilities of your party members, because you do find party members that will help you from time to time. The game is just weird. It's really freaking weird. And it doesn't even really punish you, per se. Like, if you die in a battle, the game, in my experience, just generally kicks you back. And it's like, well, you want to try again? You want to do something else? Like, all right, I'm good for that. I never felt like I was punished, which is good. Because it makes you feel comfortable with experimenting, too. Like, you may come across an enemy where the game will go, these guys are really hard. You're like, I don't care. Let me fight them. And then you die. And it's like, whoops, you blundered. Try again. It's like, all right, thanks, man. I appreciate that. It's just good. It lets you experiment. It lets you play around with the dialogue and, like, just seeing what can happen when you do different things. Not to say that the dialogue choices don't have consequences. You might make a choice that may screw you up or a choice you might want to do. But that's also part of the adventure. And it's not enough that's going to kind of gatekeep you from just experiencing the game. It's just enough to say, well, you're on a different route now than you were before.
Yeah. Well, the game's...
Okay.
I was going to say, game's at $23. It was a surprise launch on the Switch. It previously surprise launched a few months ago on PC. Chris, you and Catherine covered that one, didn't you? The Steam version.
It was just Catherine.
Oh, I thought both of you did.
No, I didn't get it.
Oh, my apologies. Well, you could play her copy.
Oh, no, I'm going to get it on the Switch at some point.
Oh, well, there you go. Well, did you know you could get standard or collector's edition of the game?
Amazing.
They're available for pre-order now. You could get a standard edition for $45, which includes a glow-in-the-dark sticker sheet, a soundtrack download card, and a microfiber mapkin. Or if you want to spring for a full-on collector's edition, you also get a freshman disorientation guide, sorry, I can't talk, postcards, coasters, a 2.5D rubber keychain, a 3D collector's box, window sticker family, you know, the little families you see on the back of cars, window stickers, and a compass.
Nice.
And that's $100. That's a lot
of stuff. I can't believe it.
Yes, and you can get that at a variety of locations, or from the Serenity Forge store, who is handling the physical publishing of this one on the Switch. And also, gasp and shock and awe, they announced it for PS4 and PS5 as well.
Nice.
So it will be hitting those platforms in the future. And I asked about Xbox. They said there's nothing in the works right now, but it's not off the table. So who knows? Maybe in the future we'll see it on Xbox. They're focused on PlayStation now. I hope it shows up because I fucking love the Loathing games. Pernell, it's 23. What do you think?
This is an easy recommendation. I don't know if I'm going to jump on getting a physical because, you know, the price difference is quite the jump. But if you're dropping 20-something bucks to experience the game, totally worth the freaking money. Very much so. It's a hilarious time. And while you're at it, go back and buy West of Loathing, too. Just give yourself the gift of laughter. You won't regret it.
It is a good one, yeah.
It only costs 22 meat.
Cool. Well, that is it for this episode.
Amazing.
Made it through another one. Aki, thanks for being here, hanging out till the end. Big thanks to Brooke and Grant for coming on, and Tim for coming on and doing their time and hanging out as long as they could. Thanks to you two for being here for the whole time as well. Music. Does anyone have any ideas?
No. From West of Loathing. I wish I could find the track that plays in the bar in this game, because god damn, that guy plays the spoons like a master of the spoons. Is the OST on? If the OST is on YouTube, we can play something from that. But if not, play something from Mustard.
I was going to say, they're not spoons, but our friend Aleshawn years ago did a song on a can of Sparks.
Do it. Wow. Do it. There right. It is. That's in the spirit of the desire. Play that.
So, Sparks is, well, it's what us old people used to think of as alcoholic Red Bull.
No. Oh, good shit. Okay.
And it was outlawed very quickly.
Yeah, because it's not a gun.
Because it's not a gun.
Yeah, basically. I mean, it did kill a bunch of people.
That's the second time that song has come up spontaneously in this podcast.
Gotta love it.
I didn't realize that.
Joe, you should call it SML's Got a Gun.
SML's Got a Gun.
But spell it like gotta, like have to. Gotta. G-O-T-T-A.
I'm looking for a pen. There is one. S-M-L's.
Gotta go. Gotta go.
Cool. Recording done.